Well, good evening. I'm delighted to be here. Thank you for the opportunity to talk to you about what I love the most and what I love to do the most. I'm so thankful to God that in the course of my life, He got me out of the business world, and it's something that I felt like I could do from just wanting to do it, just the love of it. A lot of people don't have that opportunity in life, and I feel so grateful to God that He led me to that point. So thank you for this opportunity to speak to you tonight. I want to talk to you tonight about something that I think all of us can relate to. But let me run a little test, if you don't mind. How many of you would join me in raising my hand to this question? Please raise your hand if you've ever been spiritually discouraged. Good, I got the right audience. I want to talk to you tonight about Elijah. How to overcome discouragement. I want to show you what God did for this great man when he got so discouraged that he said this, and he requested, this is Elijah speaking to the Lord, and he requested for himself that he might die. It said, "It is enough now, O Lord, take my life." I've never been that depth of discouragement. Maybe you have. Maybe you've known others who have. But I want to remind you, this was a great man. And this was after a great victory for God. But he got so discouraged. And I want to show you why, or at least as best I can, why he became discouraged and what God did for him to overcome that great depth of discouragement. But you know, there's several discouraged men in the Bible. Moses, he said, "It's too burdensome for me." He was talking about the children of Israel. Always complaining. He said, "Lord, it's just too burdensome for me. Take my life." God said, "No, you're doing the job I want you to do." And further, Asaph, who thought about himself, he was a poor man, a righteous man, a poor man. And he looked at all the wicked rich people and said, "You know, why are they doing so well? Here I am, I'm righteous, but I'm not doing well." He said, "In vain I've kept my heart pure." In other words, this purity just doesn't pay. You ever felt like that? You know, I'm trying to live right and do the right thing, and others who are not are faring much better than I. And then Jeremiah, who'd want Jeremiah's job? He said, "Everyone curses me." His job was to go to the children of Israel in that dark time and in essence say, "It's too late. God's going to punish you. It's too late. Everyone curses me." And then what about David? "No one cares for my soul. I've never been that low." Have you ever been there? No one cares for you. No one to give you a loving touch or a loving word, a voice of encouragement. David was there. Great man. And then what about the great apostle Paul? He said when he came to Troas and he didn't find Titus, he was so discouraged. He said, "I had no rest for my soul. Even a door of opportunity was open to me. And as far as I can determine from the silence of the scriptures there, he didn't take it." Can you imagine Paul not taking advantage of an opportunity for the gospel? He was discouraged. And then, of course, there was Jesus. In going into the Garden of Gethsemane before the crucifixion, Mark records that Jesus said, "My soul is deeply grieved to the point of death." When I get to heaven, I'm going to ask the Lord, "What did you mean? I don't know that I fully understand." Did he mean that he was so torn up inside? It was like what I've heard other people tell me, a panic attack when you think you're going to die. My soul was so grieved to the point of death. And then what about the warnings in Scripture? From this, the New Testament, Galatians 6, 9. Let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. Why would we ever grow weary in doing good? Because we don't see any results. We don't see any fruit. We begin to think it's not doing any good. Our teaching, our preaching, our exhorting, our example. But he says, don't give up. We cannot succumb to that level of discouragement. And then this one from Hebrews 12, verse 3. For consider him who has endured such hostility by sinners against himself. Who is that? Jesus. Consider him. So that you will not grow weary and lose heart. That's the purpose of our lesson tonight, is to give you a way to think about discouragement so that we do not grow weary and lose heart. And so let us begin. When discouraged, you can, and we're going to look at three options. When discouraged, you can, and I want to suggest that you read 1 Kings 19 later. I'm going to have to go so fast because y'all want me to be done when? I'm watching the clock, but as the brethren back home, it doesn't mean a thing. But I'm watching it, and I want to do this quickly. So I've put all the scriptures on the board, up on the screen. So just read them from there. But remember, 1 Kings 19, tonight or sometime this week, go back there and read the story for yourself of how God encouraged this great man. Well, the first thing we can do when we're discouraged is cut and run. I am out of here. I've put up with this long enough, and I'm gone. I was driving to work on a Friday afternoon, and I was tired of this job. I was just working with a CPA business, doing tax returns, working 70, 65, 70 hours a week. And I came to a fork in the road, and this way said to Austin, and this said to downtown Houston. My office was in downtown Houston. You know, my car just went right off the road, and I drove to Austin. You ever done that? Just go to the airport and buy a ticket. I've seen people walk away from their marriages, walk away from the Lord, walk away from the church. Just out of here, fat enough. And likely because we did not deal with discouragement early enough and correctly enough. Yeah, we can cut and run. Let's watch Elijah. This is what he did. But you need to know the important background of what led up to his decision to run. First of all, God had said to Elijah, I'm going to put a drought on Israel, the northern kingdom of Israel. This was during the reign of King Ahab and Queen Jezebel. And if ever there was a marriage made in hell, this was it. They made each other worse. And so for their wickedness, God said, it's not going to rain or even have dew on the ground for 2 to 3 years. In the third year, he appears to Elijah and says, you go talk to Ahab. And so Ahab did that, and he proposed a challenge to the people and also to Ahab. And what was that challenge? Elijah came near to all the people and said, how long will you hesitate between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. But if Baal, follow him. But the people did not answer him a word. Make up your mind. It's time to act. Who's going to be your God? And so Elijah proposed that we have a cook-off on Carmel. We're going to get us two bulls. We're going to cut them up, and you're going to have your altar, and I'm going to have my altar. There were 450 false prophets of Baal and 400 of the Asherah. 850 of them all. He said, you can go first. Build your altar, put your meat on it, pray to your gods, and the one who brings the fire is the true God. Of course, they went first, and they began to jump around and incantate and holler and scream and cut themselves, and the blood was flowing. And Elijah began to chide them a little bit, a little louder. Possibly he's asleep. Possibly he went on a journey. And they kept going, and by evening they were absolutely exhausted. No fire. Elijah carefully built his altar of 12 stones representing the 12 tribes of Israel. And he told them four times, or was it three? Read 1 Kings 19. I know there were four pitchers of water. He told him to douse that, the wood that he had put there on the altar, to the point that there was water around the moat, around the base of it. And he prayed to God, and God sent the fire. And the people hit the ground and said, the Lord is God. He's the one that we must obey and serve. And he said, grab those false prophets, and they did. And they took them down off of Mount Carmel, down near the brook that runs down there, and they killed them. Won a great victory. And Elijah told his servant, go and look toward the Mediterranean. He come back and tell me what you see. He said, I see a little cloud, about as big as your hand. And he said, go tell Ahab it's about to rain. And he better get in his chariot and ride, because it's going to come a rain. And he did. And Ahab drove 17 miles to Jezreel, which was then serving as the capital where his queen Jezebel was living. And Elijah girded up his loins and outran him to Jezreel. Great victory. And then Jezebel speaks. Anybody tell me that women aren't powerful? I ought to read this one. Now Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done and how he'd killed all the prophets with the sword. Then Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah saying, so may the gods do to me and even more if I do not make your life as the life of one of them by tomorrow about this time. And he was afraid. How do you explain that? How does this great man of God, who has withstood all this opposition and led the people back to God with a great victory, and just a few hours later, he's afraid and rose and ran for his life and came to Beersheba, which belongs to Judah, and left his servant there. My brethren, we're all a mixed bag. Everyone take heed how you stand, lest you fall. The most courageous person in the world under one set of circumstances can prove to be an outright coward in another set of circumstances. There's been many a brave soldier on the battlefield who has run headlong into the enemy to rescue a friend or do whatever, who is an absolute coward the next night in the bar. Back at home. Don't ever think because you've had a great victory, it showed great strength in one set of circumstances, that you always will or will not be tempted to play the coward. Elijah was afraid and he ran for his life. But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness, left his servant there near Beersheba, and came and sat down under a juniper tree, and he requested for himself that he might die. It said, it is enough now, O Lord, take my life, for I am not better than my father's. Elijah threw himself a pity party. You ever done that? I have. Problem with a pity party, you're the only person who shows up. And Elijah's down there by himself, isolated. Do you see the connection? When we get discouraged, one of our tendencies is to cut and run and isolate ourselves. Something tragic is going on in our lives and it's difficult and we're discouraged, and often what do? We don't see them at worship anymore. They're not with us. They're isolating themselves. Now, I want to be thoughtful and compassionate. There are times I didn't want to be around other people. I'll never forget, I had a dear sister in the local church there, and she was talking with me, and she'd been a little bit disappointed that not enough people had come to visit her in the hospital when she was sick. And I said, well, I understand that. Did some come? Yes, some come, but not all did. And I said, well, you know, everybody's a little different in the way that they want people to react. And I asked her, I said, do you love me? She said, oh, yes, John, I love you. She said, do you really love me? Yes, John, I love you. I said, when I'm in the hospital, if you love me, stay home. Well, John, I couldn't do that. I said, well, do you want to do what I want or do you want to do what you want? If you love me, you'll do what I think helps me. Everybody's different. But the tendency is to isolate ourselves from other people. And the local church can be, hopefully is, an antidote to that tendency, because it can be disastrous. But he himself went a day's journey. And by himself, he says, Lord, just take my life. Just take my life. David, watch this. My heart is in anguish within me, and the terrors of death have fallen upon me. Fear and trembling come upon me, and horror has overwhelmed me. I said, oh, that I had wings like a dove. I would just fly away and be at rest. Behold, I would wander far away. I would lodge in the wilderness. Does that touch anybody? I'm out of here. Oh, that I could be just a little bird. Fly away. I would hasten to my place of refuge from the stormy wind and tempest. For it is not an enemy. Here's the reason. He's heartbroken. His heart is shattered. Why? For it is not an enemy who reproaches me, then I would bear it. Nor is it one who hates me, who has exalted himself against me, then I could hide myself from him. It's not an enemy. Well, who is it? But it is you. It's you. A man, my equal, my companion and my familiar friend. We who had sweet fellowship together walked in the house of God in the throng. My dear brothers and sisters, in the family of the Lord can come some of the deepest wounds. And we have to be courageous to act in such a way as to heal them. To help heal them. Cutting and running usually is not an answer. And of course, we know that it is so difficult often in our families when those marriage vows have been broken and a person is just devastated. Yes, there is a tendency to isolate. But it's not a solution long term. We might understand for a while, but not long term. Yes, we can cut and run. And let me say, for balance, there comes a time when we need to leave. We need to leave certain situations that are not helpful, they're not allowing us to grow or to be godly. I understand that. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about that initial reaction to cut people off and to isolate myself in my discouragement. And the problem is, when we cut and run, and wherever we end up, what do? We carry the problem with us, because where is it? It's in us. Do you realize that the statistics show that people who divorce once, who are much more likely to divorce twice, who are much more likely to divorce a third time, and if you divorce a third time, you're much higher percentage to divorce a fourth. And you know what other studies have indicated? We tend to marry the same kind of person. Why? Because maybe the problem is within us. And we have to be courageous enough to look and to consider that situation. But then the second alternative, let's become a cynic. Let's just become bitter. Look at this. For consider him who has endured such hostility by sinners against himself. Obviously, that's Jesus. So that you will not grow weary and lose heart. Think about Jesus and what he endured and what he had to meet. See to it that no one comes short of the grace of God, that no root of bitterness springing up causes trouble, and by it many be defiled. My brethren, is heart sick as we become because of discouragement or being falsely accused or mistreated, we must guard against a heart of bitterness. It will make everything worse, especially us. No, becoming a cynic is not an answer either. But fortunately, there is a third. The young people have taught me to raise three fingers this way. Time has taken away that. So, three. There's a third. And aren't we glad? You know what it is? Think it through. Think it through. And this is hard and often very painful to think it through. Watch how God helps Elijah think through his discouragement. Think it through. First of all, Elijah, you got to get in shape to think. What do you mean by that, preacher? Not every state of physical disability is susceptible or amenable to thinking correctly. What do we tend to do when we get discouraged? Some person says, I start eating. Does that ring a bell? And what do we normally start eating when we're discouraged? Health food, things that are low in calories, things that, right? I see a lot of smiles in the audience. That's what we do, right? Other people say, no, man, I start picking out on donuts and chocolate and comfort food. Other people go shopping, get the credit cards up. You know, and it works till the bill comes. Think it through. And we got to get in shape to think. Watch what God does with Elijah. He laid down and slept under a juniper tree. This man hadn't really slept in days. And behold, there was an angel touching him. And he said to him, arise, eat. He'd not eaten well either. Then he looked, and behold, there was at his head a bread cake baked on hot stones and a jar of water. So he ate and drank and lay down again. The angel of the Lord came again a second time. He touched him and said, arise, eat, because the journey is too great for you. So he arose and ate and drank and went in the strength of that food 40 days and 40 nights to Horeb, the mountain of God. We got to get in shape to think. Oh, and this is when our loving brothers and sisters can really help us. Not with an abundance of advice or counsel maybe at this point, but what? Healthy food. Just take care of them physically. Get them in shape to think. Maybe the baby, this newborn baby, has been crying for 3 months or at least almost every night and they're sleep deprived. Maybe we need to stay with the baby, care for it, and allow her to get some rest. Husbands, think about that. Wives, think about that in regard to one another. We need to help them to get in shape to think. And then they need to go to a place to think. Not every place is conducive to thinking through a painful, difficult emotion or situation. A place to think. What did God do with Elijah? So he rose and ate and drank and went in the strength of that food 40 days and 40 nights to Horeb. What is it? The mountain of God. A place where he can think. It talked to God. It concentrate on God. Maybe it just means shutting the office door. Maybe it means to just go to another friend's house for a few hours or a day, to a place where we can not only get in physical shape, but a place to think. But even more, we need to think about helpful things. Not everything is helpful. Not everything will help us. Helpful things. And look at this. Then he came there to a cave and lodged there. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him. There have been many occasions when I've been in the hospitals visiting people. And they're reading everything but the word of God. Now I realize there have been many books that take principles or statements from the Bible and expand upon them, and they can be very helpful. But go to the one who created you, the one who knows you, who knows what will help you. The word of the Lord came to him. And I want to say this. In our churches, I have every confidence that this is so here. It's been this way every time I visited. But we have to emphasize the word of the Lord. Yes, poems and illustrations and anecdotes and etc. can illustrate and highlight a point, but we need to help one another know the word of God better so that when we're in these situations, those thoughts come to us. Those passages come to us. I've known some people to write certain passages in the first pages of their Bible that they go to and read when they get discouraged. Let the word of the Lord come to you. Let him talk to you. Remember, the Bible is him talking to us. Our prayer is us talking to him. Think about things that will help. When I pondered to understand this, Asaph wrote, pondered this dilemma of the wicked rich, always prospering, and here I am, a poor, righteous man, and I am hurting. When I pondered to understand this, it was troublesome in my sight. I even thought about quitting. Until I came into the sanctuary of God, then I perceived therein. Who's the there? It's the wicked rich. You see, this isn't the whole story. Life here, is it? And he continues, surely you set them, the wicked rich, in slippery places. You cast them down to destruction. How they are destroyed in a moment. They are utterly swept away by sudden terrors. Like a dream when one awakes. O Lord, when aroused, you will despise their form. We need to remember that. Shakespeare put it this way, all that glitters is not gold. And we need to remember that when we're going through a discouragement. Further, in thinking about helpful things, we need to ask, what am I doing here? And by here I mean in this discouraged state. You know why? For often if we retrace how we got there, we will see how to get from there. If we trace, well, this happened, they said this, they did this, then I did this, then I thought this, and I became discouraged. And then I did this, and I got more discouraged. Then I failed to do this, and then it was even deeper. Ask, what am I doing here? Look what God does with Elijah. Then he came there to a cave and lodged there, and behold, the word of the Lord came to him. And he said to him, the Lord said to Elijah, what are you doing here, Elijah? What are you doing where you are? If you're discouraged tonight, what are you doing there? Understand it. What are you doing here, Elijah? Then get all the facts. One of the great contributors to discouragement is an unbalanced view of life, emphasizing one facet or fact over another. Get all the facts. Watch it. He said, Elijah said, you want to know what I'm doing here? Let me tell you, Lord. I have been very zealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the sons of Israel have forsaken your covenant, torn down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword, and I alone am left, and they seek my life to take it away. Oh, really? Look what God says. God says, Elijah, I will leave 7,000 in Israel. All the knees that have not bowed to Baal, and every mouth that has not kissed him. Elijah, you feel all alone. You feel like you're the only one standing up for me. You've got to do this all by yourself. I'm the only one, Lord. He said, no, you're not. Elijah, whether you know it or not, there's 7,000 like you. You ever felt like you're the only one? You're the only one who wants to do what's right. You're the only one who really understands. Really? What is the Lord implying? There can be strength in numbers. We need to make sure that we associate with those, as we would say, with like precious faith. 7,000 yet? No. Elijah, you've blown one or two facts out of proportion. You're not the only one. And then, no temptation has overtaken you, but such as is common to man. What do you learn about that? In this room alone, there's enough variety in our personal experiences in dealing with temptation and discouragement likely to help anyone else here, because there's someone who's gone through that already. But we don't know it. Brethren, may I encourage you? Let's start opening our mouths about our times that are not so great. Our brother Kenny spoke of this morning. Yes, we're reluctant to admit our sin to others and our weaknesses and our temptations. But I'll tell you one thing that's helped me. That is working with young people for over 40 years. Because they're going to ask you. You talk to them about these problems that they could have as young people. And I've had them say, well, Mr. John, did you have this problem? Have you had this problem? And what am I going to do? Lie to them? I chose not. I said, yes. When I was your age and even older, that was a temptation. And yes, at times I succumbed to that temptation, but I don't want you to. I want to share with you how to build you up. I want you to be better than I was when I was at your age. First 2 years, you college students, first 2 years of my academic career, college, I count as a waste spiritually because of me. And I tended to blame everybody else. Problem wasn't them, it was me. Fortunately, in the third year, I decided to do something about it. I left that college and went to another. Took all new friends. Some had to give. So I'm going to encourage you. Do it now when you're young. You'll never regret it. And you'll look back as not wasted years, but profitable years. Maybe the best years of your life. And then look, God is faithful. It isn't just preacher talk. God is faithful. He's made a promise here that we have all common problems. Therefore, we can help one another. And note, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you're able? What is he telling us? If you're being tempted, God knows you can handle it. Or he wouldn't allow it. With you and God, you can defeat it. Otherwise, God wouldn't allow it. And then, but with the temptation, we'll do what? We'll provide the way of escape also. The problem is we don't look for the escape. We enjoy sin. We need to start looking for escape. And then, so that you will be able to endure it. Some temptations are not taken away, but God gives us the strength and the power to endure it. And then know the power in small things. Oh, this is one of the eye-openers for me when I studied this text many years ago. Just know the power in small things. Watch this. And he said, go forth and stand on the mountain before the Lord. And the Lord was passing by. You see, Elijah's before the Lord. He's passing by. And a great and strong wind was rending the mountains and breaking in pieces the rocks before the Lord. That's how big my problem is. God, you got to come with all your power to fix my problem. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake. Oh, that's what it's going to take, Lord. I'll need an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake of fire, Lord, that's what it's going to take. A roaring, blazing, consuming fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a sound of a just a little blowing breeze. And I believe the textual implication is that's where the Lord was. It's all he took. When Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his mantle and went out and stood in the entrance of the cave. And behold, a voice came to him and said, what are you doing here, Elijah? Maybe it's a car. It's where we can come in. Maybe it's a phone call. Maybe it's a hot meal. Maybe it's a kind word. There was a lady who was so despondent, one of the sisters. The preacher went out to comfort her. She was not comforted. The deacons went. She was not comforted. The elders went. She was not comforted. The little boy in the church went to see her. She was comforted. They asked her, what did he do? She said, he crawled up in my arms and we cried together. Can I cry with you in silence? Can you sense the silence? Can our spirits touch in compassion and sorrow? My brethren, there's a place for cheerful words, but there's probably first a place, a better place, for tears. To weep with those who weep, and then to rejoice with those who rejoice. Who has heard of these men? If you've heard of any of these men, just raise your hand. I got to do it quickly. Shamua, Shaphat, Egal, Palti, Gadiel, Gadai, Hamiel, Sathur. Nobody? Y'all don't know these men? You got your work cut out here for you, Kenny. Nabai, maybe it's my Texas accent. Nabi, Guel. You know who these 10 guys are? The faithless 10 spies who said, "We can't do it. They're too big. They've got fortified cities. They're giants. We can't take the land. Let's go back to Egypt." Well, okay, you failed the first test, but really you should. Who would want to remember these 10? They ought to be forgotten. Now watch it. See if you know these. Who's heard of these men? Y'all haven't? Your hand goes up if you've heard of these men. I'm not going to take up a collection, I promise you. Joshua and Caleb, who stood up against the majority, said, "We can do it by God's power." The mighty minority. What then shall we say to these things? If God is for us, who is against us? It's an implied question. Nobody that counts, nobody can defeat us if he is for us. And then, oh, this is hard. Go to work. Yeah. We got to help one another when we're discouraged to go to work. It's going to help us. Watch what he does with Elijah. The Lord said to him, "Elijah, go return on your way to the wilderness of Damascus. And when you have arrived, you shall anoint Hazael king over Aram, and Jehu the son of Nimshi you shall anoint king over Israel. And Elisha the son of Shaphat of Abel-Meholah shall anoint as prophet in your place." You got things to do, Elijah. Important things that even extend beyond your life. So he departed from there and found Elisha the son of Shaphat while he was plowing with 12 pairs of oxen before him, and he with the 12th. And Elijah passed over to him and threw his mantle on him. He's passing the torch. Go to work, Elijah. Important things to do in service to others, in service of me. Remember the one talent man? What did he do? "Oh, I was so worried. You being a hard master, I went and just hid mine in the soil, in the ground." You lazy, wicked slave. Doing nothing. And then, now I'm preaching to myself. Anybody who knows me, that I tend to be an independent person. Accept help. Will you? Will you accept help? Look what he does. He, Elisha, the one that Elijah had put his mantle upon. He left the oxen and ran after Elijah and said, "Please let me kiss my father and my mother, then I will follow you." So he returned from following him, after Elijah, and took the pair of oxen and sacrificed them and boiled their flesh with the implements of the oxen and gave it to the people, and they ate. And he arose, followed after Elijah, and ministered to him. How many old people we got in the building? I'm there. Now, I went to school with John and Becky, but I was much older than they when we were at school. Kenny is younger. I met him. Julie is a lot younger. And Rob. Older folk, live your life in such a way that young people like to be with you. It's a gift, but they can be an immeasurable gift to you. Those of you who know me know that I've never married. I have no biological children, but I got a lot of kids. And I'm looking at some of them right now. And they are precious to me. For they've allowed me to have some of the joy of being a father without much of the problems. To be consulted, to talk on the phone, to at least think that possibly I'm helping in giving advice and counsel. Accept help from them. It won't be long, likely, when I'll need more help than I need today. Do you know what? We're just about done, but not yet. Their four children were, my brother died this year, younger brother, 6 years younger than I. You never know, do you? Never thought of that. Broke our hearts, came suddenly. Have two older sisters. But I always knew, you know, you just kind of know the family dynamics. I always knew that when it came time for my parents to need help, I was going to be the go-to guy. And before God and you, I resented it. Didn't like it. Unfair! I'm preaching the gospel. I'm traveling the United States, preaching, you know, from coast to coast. I'm helping people. I repented of that. Because God put my mama in the hospital with heart problems. And the only reason I went is because I couldn't stand the thought she'd be there by herself. And I'll tell you, it's some of the best 7 years of my life. We got so close to both my parents, and I felt that joy that I returned in a very small measure that which they had lavished upon me of love and acceptance and encouragement. Young people, don't miss it. When your parents or older people need you, step up. It's going to bless you. I promise you. Yes, it's hard. I thought, I'm so inadequate. I've never raised children. I don't know how to do all these things that usually women know how to do. Now, my other siblings were helpful to the degree they could, but somebody had to organize all this and see that it happened. Stay on the doctors and everything that goes with it. Hire a housekeeper. Somebody's got to do that. Let it be you. It's going to bless you. And then those of us older, let them. Let your kids do that for you. He's going to bless them. It's the cycle of life. It's the cycle of life. Thank you. You've been so good to listen. And now we close with these statements. Some closing thoughts. Are you discouraged? One thing you can say about that, you're in pretty good company. See all those great men that we listed? And there were women too that we could have listed. There's just not as much said about their time of discouragement. And what about God comforts his discouraged children? He loves us and he's going to use it to make our time of discouragement a time of growth. Elijah, who prayed to die, never did. Isn't that something? Conclusion. So you thought I was done. It's not necessarily wrong to be discouraged. It's just wrong to stay discouraged. Thank you for listening tonight. We're going to stand and sing our song. What is it? What's our song going to be? What? Zion's call. Zion's call. God's calling from Zion, the city of God. Zion's call. If you'd like to respond to the invitation, please come. Zion. Sweetly rings over land and sea, bidding us look to realms Zion.
To the call of